It's Monday, May 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up, Southeast Asia's migrant crisis takes another deadly turn, not on the open waters this time, but in mass graves discovered in Malaysia. The fall of the Iraqi city of Ramadi to the Islamic State intensifies debate in Washington about the U.S. strategy to help Iraq fight the militant group. VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard tells us about a dangerous computer virus that you should be on the lookout for. And thousands of U.S. military veterans ride their motorcycles through Washington to honor fallen comrades from the Vietnam War on this Memorial Day holiday.
Some of the people coming will be going to the Vietnam Wall for the first time. People who have friends whose names are written on that wall.
That's all coming up on International Edition. Malaysia authorities say they have discovered 139 grave sites dug by suspected people smugglers in the northern part of the country. As VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Bangkok, the bodies appear to be those of migrants who have been fleeing Myanmar and Bangladesh in the hopes of a better life elsewhere in the region.
Speaking to reporters Monday in the town of Wang Kalian, near the Thai border, Malaysia National Police Chief General Khalid Abu Bakar detailed the discovery of the graves and camps that have been found.
The first team has gone in this morning, forensic and medical team, to exhume whatever remains there. We will conduct post-mortem on those remains which we found to get to the cause of death.
Officials say the largest of the camps, which were found between May 11th and 23rd in a hard-to-reach mountainous jungle area, could have held up to 300 people. The graves were located in Malaysia's smallest state of Perlis, adjacent to Thailand's Songkhla province, where mass graves were recently discovered. One of the Malaysia graves is only 100 meters from a similar site found earlier this month on the Thai side of the border. The border area was a way station for smugglers funneling migrants from Bangladesh and Myanmar, primarily to Malaysia. The discovery of mass graves in Thailand, where at least 26 bodies have been exhumed, prompted a crackdown on the trafficking network by Bangkok's military-run government. Malaysia and Thailand have faced accusations from rights groups that authorities had turned a blind eye to the problem and that there was evidence of complicity by corrupt officials. Phil Robertson is the deputy director in Asia for the non-governmental organization Human Rights Watch.
Clearly, this area has been an enclave for these ransom for release camps. And I don't believe for a second that that could take place without connivance at some level by the authorities.
Malaysian Police Chief General Khalid was asked by reporters to respond to such accusations.
We will investigate. We will not condone anybody, including Malaysian officials.
Thailand has taken into custody or issued arrest warrants for nearly 80 people in connection with the smuggling. Robertson at Human Rights Watch is calling for a more thorough investigation on both sides of the border.
In Thailand, what we've seen is local politicians and police being arrested. That's a first step, but they're not getting to the real masterminds, the sort of senior patrons behind these movements. And I'm expecting that we may see the same on the Malaysian side as well, that a few low-level scapegoats will be rounded up to take the blame for what was happening here.
Without a secure place to land, some smugglers this month abandoned their boats on the sea, leaving hundreds of people on rickety wooden ships to fend for themselves with little or no food and water. Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand rebuffed the overcrowded vessels seeking refuge. Last week, Indonesia and Malaysia, facing international criticism, announced they would temporarily allow the boat people to land so they could be processed for repatriation or resettlement elsewhere. The passengers are Bangladeshis and Rohingyas from Myanmar. Several thousand have been rescued off Indonesia and Malaysia or have swum ashore this month. Rights groups believe thousands more could still be at sea. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
And VOA's Andrew Palchewski joins me here in the studio to tell us more about how the VOA audience is reacting to this story about the Rohingya migrants. Andrew?
Absolutely. It's been a huge story on our social media channels, and I wanted to mention there's one video that we put up of the boat people off the coast in Southeast Asia. I know it's from about a week ago, so it was prior to all the stories that we're hearing now, but even in the past week, this story and this compelling footage viewed over 500,000 times on our Facebook page, over 4,000 likes, over 13,000 shares, many of those coming from different Rohingya advocacy groups and people wanting to spread this story. So even though the story is a bit older and before these people started coming to shore and being accepted, it's getting huge response because it's this compelling, compelling footage.
Right. And what else have you got trending on social media today?
Well, here in the U.S., it's Memorial Day. So hashtag Memorial Day 2015, hashtag Memorial Day are some topics that are trending. And I wanted to mention something that was trending yesterday into today, hashtag Rolling Thunder. Now, this is a motorcycle rally that comes through the nation's capital every year. Thousands, tens of thousands of people on motorcycles come to the nation's capital to remember their fallen brothers and sisters, soldiers that have died in battle. VOA's Catherine Gibson has a video of that, and she'll be we'll have that video on Facebook of her story. But we had people on the backs of these bikes with smartphones filming it, putting it on social media. So
nice. It's
interesting how it's changed over the years.
That'll
since 1987 when it started.
A good perspective to have.
Absolutely.
And we're going to actually hear Catherine Gibson's report later in the show.
Excellent.
Well, Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says he believes the fall of the Iraqi provincial capital of Ramadi to Islamic State militants last week reflects a lack of will by Iraqi government forces to fight back. As VOA's Victor Beatty reports, Carter's comment follows President Barack Obama's assessment that the fight to degrade and destroy the IS group will be a multi-year commitment.
Carter, speaking on CNN Sunday, said the Iraqi army was not outnumbered, but in fact vastly outnumbered the opposing IS force. He said that raises a question about the willingness of the Iraqis to fight the Islamic State group and defend themselves. The defense chief expressed the hope that given the proper training, equipment, support, and time, the Iraqis will develop the will to fight. An Iraqi lawmaker quoted by the Associated Press described the comments as unrealistic and baseless. He attributed the loss of Ramadi to a lack of good equipment, weapons, and aerial support. But regional analyst Nabil Khoury of Northwestern University says the U.S. administration must have known for some time one of the biggest problems facing Iraq's armed forces is corruption.
The corruption of the armed forces means that a lot of the money allocated by the Iraqi budget for the military does not, in fact, go to the military, but goes to line the pockets of people in government and generals in the military.
Khoury says not only has the strength of the army been inflated, but Baghdad has failed to adequately motivate people to fight in IS-occupied territories. Khoury says he believes Ramadi will, like Tikrit, eventually be recaptured, but the use of paramilitary forces, he says, shows the Iraqi armed forces are inadequate. In an interview with the U.S. publication The Atlantic last week, President Obama acknowledged the loss of Ramadi was a tactical setback and said in Sunni areas more training and commitments are needed. He said he has always anticipated a multi-year campaign against the IS group. White House spokesman Josh Earnest underscored that view on Friday.
We would expect to see ISIL sustain additional degradation between now and the next couple of years. And that's going to require continuing to apply this strategy, looking for areas where we can ramp up the training and assistance that we're offering, the continued use of targeted airstrikes, the continued investment of our coalition partners in this effort. It's going to require a sustained commitment.
Defense Chief Carter also says while the U.S.-led airstrikes are effective, there is nothing the U.S. can do to substitute for the Iraqi forces' will to fight. The chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Senator John McCain, told the CBS program Face the Nation Sunday, the Obama administration has no strategy for defeating the IS group.
We need to have a robust strategy. We need more troops on the ground. We need forward air controllers. Do you know that 75% of those combat missions return to base without having fired a weapon. It's because we don't have somebody on the ground who can identify a moving target. We need to have a strategy. There is no strategy.
Appearing Sunday on a separate U.S. program, House Armed Services Committee Chairman Congressman William MacThornberry was asked if the Islamic State group is winning.
They have a lot of momentum on their side. You see not only ISIS gaining territory in Iraq and in Syria, and I think the map gives it very graphically about their territory expanding, but what a map like that doesn't show is the ideology continues to grow. So you've got these sorts of jihadists from Mali, Somalia, Libya, all the way to Afghan Pakistan, who are pledging allegiance to ISIS.
Michelle Flournoy, a former senior defense official in the Obama administration, said the key to pushing Islamic State fighters out of Mosul and Anbar province in Iraq is arming and supporting the Sunni population. She also called for pressuring the Shia-dominated government in Baghdad to devolve more governance and resources to Iraq's provinces. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Well, it's time for a quick break, but there's more news ahead on VOA.
Here are the news headlines from VOA. Malaysia's police chief says 139 graves believed to contain the remains of migrants have been found near the country's border with Thailand, and that some graves contain more than one body. The national police chief told reporters today that the graves were found at 28 suspected human trafficking camps. Syrian government forces carried out at least 15 airstrikes today, targeting Islamic State fighters in the seized central city of Palmyra, activists said. The UN Security Council has condemned the killing of an opposition leader in Burundi, whose death has derailed efforts to resolve the country's crisis through UN-sponsored negotiations. Ethiopians voted in elections Sunday that are expected to give the ruling EPRDF party another five-year hold on power. There were no reports of election-related violence, and African Union observers said the voting was orderly. That's a look at our top news stories this hour. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. government regulations allowing the National Security Agency to collect bulk data from U.S. telephone users are set to expire on June 1st. Last week, the U.S. Senate failed to pass a resolution to keep the controversial surveillance program going. VOA's Michael Bowman covers the Senate on nearby Capitol Hill. He spoke to VOA's Jim Stevenson about what Congress could do next.
Congress left town, but not before displaying that having the Republicans in control of both chambers is no guarantee that there will be agreement and action on something as important as how the United States handles national security in the post-9/11 era. The United States has a program where the National Security Agency collects the phone records of all Americans at all time, as was pointed out by Republican Senator Rand Paul, in a 10-hour, in 10 hours of uninterrupted speaking on the Senate floor.
Quite a display of oratory there.
Yes, and the second time he has done so in just the last 3 years. The first time was to draw attention to America's use of drones. Nevertheless, the Republican-led Senate voted on two bills and voted both of them down. The first would have taken phone records and kept them in the control of telephone companies, and the United States government could access those records via a court order. However, these records would be physically held by the telephone companies. And that's something that the Obama administration wants. That's something that the House of Representatives passed just 10 days ago, and it was thought that that was the best vehicle to resolve the issue. However, the Senate voted it down. Then the Senate voted on a two-month extension of the existing program. This was considered a stopgap just to give Congress some more time to come up with a better and more permanent solution. But at about 1 in the morning on Saturday morning, the Senate voted that down as well. So the House had already left town. The Senate voted down two bills, including the one that was passed by the House. And so as a result, Congress has left town doing nothing on the NSA's bulk collection of telephone records. That program expires at midnight on June 1st. the Senate is and the House, they are both out this week. It is the Memorial Day recess. So Congress will be returning just as this law expires, and it is not clear what, if anything, can or will be done.
There was quite a bit of disagreement between parties, within parties, on what to do with this. And you could almost say that a non-vote by the Senate was almost a no-vote. Just let it expire.
Indeed. And there is some question as to the utility of this program. It has been pointed out that of the attacks that are believed to have been prevented, it's not clear that it has specifically led to the foiling of a plot. It's also not clear if this program were to expire, say, for a day or a week or even a month, and then Congress got around to taking it up again, whether that lapse would be critical in any way regarding national security.
Well, Mike Bowman routinely covers the Senate for us, the Voice of America. Michael, thank you, and your comments are now bulk data for the masses.
Excellent. Excellent.
And that was VOA's Jim Stevenson speaking with Michael Bowman. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. It's time for a look at the latest cyber threats facing Internet users. Here is VOA's Susan Yaki with cyber correspondent Doug Bernard.
There's an old Internet scam floating around that's getting some new attention lately. It's called ransomware. And if you're unlucky, it may have already infected your computer or mobile phone. Joining us now is VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's this all about anyway?
Well, Susan, recently the FBI issued a public warning for people in the United States, alerting them to a recent spread in ransomware. Now, ransomware is basically a bug, a bit of malware. These bugs have been around since at least the early 90s, so it's nothing new. But what we are seeing is a recent renewal in Japan, in Australia, in Western Europe. They really tend to be spreading very fast. So here's how it works. Basically, your computer is infected. Perhaps you click on a link that you shouldn't, or maybe you're not using antivirus or something like that. So a bug, a bit of malware, lands on your computer, and quietly it encrypts certain kinds of files on your computer. And these types of files are things that are traditionally called user-generated. So Word documents, spreadsheets, pictures, videos, that kind of thing. Things that you probably, that mean a lot to you. So when you go and try and access one of these files, you get a little pop-up, and the pop-up basically says, your files have been encrypted. We're holding them ransom, and until you pay us, say, maybe $300, you're not going to get them back.
Well, is this just a scam, or do you really get your files back?
Well, one analyst I spoke with says, you know, this is really a business of sorts. So in some ways it's a scam. The bad guys are trying to extort money from you. But they want it also known that if indeed you pay them, say, $300 or something, that indeed they will give you that key and you will be able to unlock your files, because chances are you'll mention that to somebody else. The word gets around that for a fee that's sort of troublesome, but, you know, $300. Maybe for some people that's troublesome and irritating, but, you know, worth it to get their important trusted files back.
But you have to trust a crook.
You do have to trust a crook. But again, if you're thinking that the crooks make their money from this, if it becomes known that they're just scamming you out of $300, then nobody's going to send the money anymore. But if it gets out there that indeed, you know, if you pay up, you'll get the key and you'll get your documents back. That's actually to the benefit of the bad guys.
Well, how do you protect yourself from this?
Well, once you're infected, unfortunately, there's basically nothing that you can do. These ransomware bugs use very strong encryption, encryption levels essentially that the NSA couldn't even break. So the thing that you need to do is mitigate to protect yourself in case that you are infected. That means back up your computer. Back it up often and back it up maybe to several different locations that aren't connected permanently to your computer external drives. And, it, you know, it's also just very important, again, to use a antivirus program. Symantec, Kaspersky, Norton, there's a bunch out there, and they are pretty good at sniffing out these bugs before they actually infect your computer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Doug.
Hope you keep safe out there.
Thank you. That's VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard.
Well, for many U.S. war veterans, today's Memorial Day holiday is an opportunity to look back at a divisive conflict in the nation's history and to remember those who didn't make it home. VOA's Catherine Gibson reports.
Every year on Memorial Day weekend, the sound of the Vietnam War comes to Washington, D.C. Since 1987, hundreds of thousands of motorcycle riders across the U.S. have made the pilgrimage called Rolling Thunder to the Vietnam Memorial in the nation's capital. It's a place that U.S. military veteran Sharon Rinke says captures the intense emotions that surround that conflict.
Some of the people coming will be going to the Vietnam Wall for the first time, people who have friends whose names are written on that wall, those who have served with these people whose names are on the wall.
In the 50 years since the U.S. began combat operations in Vietnam, the veterans of that war have watched public attitudes change dramatically. More than 58,000 Americans died in the war. Those who came home faced resentment and even hostility. Clay Scott, who wrote in this year's Rolling Thunder, remembers those days.
People were cussing at me, yelling at me, you Vietnam person, you baby killer, and the whole nine yards. So
Dan, how'd you feel
I immediately
that?
Took off the uniform, hit it as fast as I could, and then got on my motorcycle and rode on home.
It was a cold reception that Jerry Martin still thinks about.
I could tell that there was a very large segment of our population who had felt that what we had done was wrong.
Martin received a Silver Star and a Purple Heart for heroism for his actions during an ambush. He says the attitudes towards Vietnam veterans have changed since then.
In some ways, these cult heroes that we weren't before.
The passage of time and a new generation of veterans have helped along that change.
We've been through a couple other wars that it seems that the soldiers and are more accepted and are supported much more than they were in the Vietnam War.
Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. Thanks to director Doug Bernard and engineer Joe Gill. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. We'll see you next time.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Like many nations, the United States pauses each year to honor those who died in its defense through military service. The custom is an ancient one, recalling a speech by the Athenian statesman Pericles that the casualties of war are worthy men, and the living need not have a more heroic spirit. On Monday, May 25th, Memorial Day, in communities across America, there will be speeches striking similar themes, and a moment of silence will be observed. Like the poppies in Flanders Fields, small flags will be seen among the graves in the nation's many military cemeteries, and the families of the fallen will stop to remember. Beyond mere ceremony, the day represents a debt paid by the living to those Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice to ensure their country's freedom. Some died in battle, some of disease. Others were lost in foreign prisons and never returned. Most died very young, defending their nation's ideals and liberties, perhaps even before they had much of a chance to fully appreciate.